Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Gabin.
And we hate movies. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in, as always. If you're new to the program, this is the second week of our worst of 2014 month. Mm-hmm. Last week, for maximum enjoyment, be sure to go back and check out I, Frankenstein.
Right.
That was a real horror show.
Yeah. And not good.
To piggyback off of that conversation, my voice, Eric Siska, and now we got Chris Cabin on the show.
I'm here now.
That's so Chris Cabin.
I can now say that this is indeed my voice and not that of Steve's, Andrew's, or Eric's.
Yeah. Right. And we taped this show in the northeastern United States, so there might be some similarities to pitch and dialect.
Yeah.
Accents, if you will. We're all from relatively the same location.
Yeah, that fat, phlegmy sound.
Yeah,
I've been drinking a lot of wine this evening, so it's phlegmier than usual. Ate a lot of pasta before we went on the air.
Oh, me too.
Because we had like a lot of leftover spaghetti.
I mean, we're all fat, phlegmy guys. You got to eat the pasta if you're going to be a fat, phlegmy guy.
It was one of those things where I was like, oh, it's leftover spaghetti. And I filled up a bowl, and I was like, well, now there's just a little bit of leftover spaghetti. Might as well finish it all.
Top her off.
Well, yeah,
that's not enough to save.
The old reasoning of that's not enough to save gets you every time.
That's not enough for lunch, please.
You know, there are children starving down the street. We should eat this.
Oh, I can't throw this out. There's still some sausage in it, et cetera. So we are here today to talk about... I'm confident in saying this. One of the worst movies, and I know it's going to sound hyperbolic because we say it all the time. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
It's from last year, of course, Winter's Tale, directed by screenwriter Akiva Goldsman. This is the movie, if you've forgotten already, where Colin Farrell has a magic horse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's really just the footnote of it.
I know, but on the other hand, it's all you need to know.
Sure.
Like, listen, if I was trying to sell you, well, like, so Chris, this was your pick,
yeah, right?
So you were like, guys, this is a really shitty movie. And, you know, usually that's fine enough. So, okay. I'm watching it last night. If you had said to me, like, hey, man, here's a movie where Colin Farrell has a magic flying horse
and talks to it like, rat-a-tat-tat style sometimes.
Oh, he's just tickety-tack talking to this horse, man. And, you know, I would have been like, wow, you sold me on that right there. Like, that's a selling point.
I mean,
he's talking to a horse that flies with magic, like, rainbow-colored fairy wings.
But, like, not even actual, like, the reflection of wings, because we're all talking about the light and how the light touches things.
Oh, man.
And who could give a shit?
Well, because we got to give a shit, first of all, because... we are all made of stars, and you die, a miracle happens where you become a star in the sky, and then eventually your own Earth can go around you where it has little people of its own that then also become stars.
Here's the thing, Eric. Is it your miracle or is it my miracle?
You better distinguish whose miracle it is, because otherwise stuff gets pretty complicated.
I think it might be Akiva Goldsman's. I don't know.
You know what the miracle is? That this movie got made and put out to human beings to watch.
What did he have on these people?
Like, I don't...
I mean, like, murders, pedophilia, like, just everything. These people must have some dirty shit accept this.
What your point is that there's a lot of big stars in this very bad movie. So we have Colin Farrell.
Well, most of these are big stars on their way out, basically. They're on the decline.
Well, you got Colin Farrell, who he's done his fair share of shit, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe, you know, he had a movie with Darren Aronofsky this year. But
which was also, in my opinion, not very good.
But he's done...
disagrees
different
with me.
Opinions on We Hate Movies.
He's done, like... 50-50, like, good and bad,
yeah.
Russell Crowe, right? So then you have Lady Sybil from Downton. What's her name?
Oh, I forget.
Oh, Lady. Yeah, that's her name.
I just know it as Lady. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so Lady Sybil, you know, so she's trying to start a movie career.
Yeah. I mean, good for her.
Good for her. You got to start somewhere.
Shouldn't be here.
Shouldn't be here. You know, take a look at a note like someone like Dan Stevens. Dan Stevens was in The Guest this year.
I mean, he
badass movie.
One of the best movies of the year.
It made my list.
I really, really love
it's
that
out
movie.
Now on Blu-ray and everything. So you
see
guys
see that movie.
Yeah,
yeah,
you have
yeah,
to
go
see
that movie.
He was also in the Third Night of the Museum movie. So, you know, take what you can get.
But also, that's money.
That is money.
This is not money.
You don't think this? Well, yeah, I guess not. There's just a lot of green screen in this movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's shot on digital and it looks like garbage.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, and the graphics are horrendous.
You got John Hurt, or William Hurt, rather.
William Hurt.
Yes.
Which, yeah, I guess he's slumming it in this movie.
Big time, I would say.
As Lady Sybil's father. Who are the other heavy hitters in this movie?
Well, I mean, I don't want
to. Oh, well, you know what? Yeah. Let's build it up.
Yeah, let's,
because
that one.
My head almost fell off. Okay, so. Yes, as Eric was saying about
that's gonna
the
be
movie,
my stage name.
Eric Movie.
No
I'm
one could
audition.
Figure out Siska, so it's Eric Movie.
I'm here reading for The Shape of Things.
I'm for it, man. Let's do it.
Yeah, the movie starts with Lady Sybil's doing a narration that basically posits, "What if all angels were stars?" or some horse shit.
It's like, if you become an angel, like, if you shed your wings, your wing dust magic garbage becomes the stars.
Man, this shit just doesn't make sense.
So when God killed all the angels, the galaxies,
as he's known to do.
Because back then it was just heaven, right? Yeah. And then God got all pissy at the angels, and he killed them all.
Right.
And then outer space was born.
I guess that is what we're led to believe.
About where we're at here.
Well, that was the thing with this movie. I couldn't tell. Does this qualify as a religious movie? Like, is this a Christian film? Or is this like a more of like a bullshit, vague, spiritual thing?
I think it's like a fairy tale, right?
It's
like
more
fantasy.
Of a fairy tale because like we are talking about because like we'll get to the judge. And man. You know, and he's referred to as Lou at one point.
Man, it just all sucks so hard. All different kinds of sucks, hard sucks, quiet sucks.
Well, this is something that's I think is it's happening more and more with movies, where we want to put everything, every kind of genre, every kind of stereotype that. For movies that everybody likes into one movie, we don't really care about the tone. We don't really care what it looks like. We don't really care about anything. We just want to put a lot of things that people like into it, and so they can grab onto those little tiny things.
Right.
So it's just a mishmash. So the Christian stuff is in there, but they're careful not to go too far with it as to not alienate a normal viewer who just wants to watch a fucking movie and not be preached to.
Right. I mean, it's not a very preachy movie, but I guess like if you're someone who loves angels, which I always think about the Carlin bit.
Oh, yeah.
What is all this shit about angels? That's all I could think about during this movie.
What are you, fucking stupid?
Yeah. Like, I guess if that's the case, like, then you can choose to see that in this movie.
Yeah.
I choose to think about George Carlin bits instead.
Sure,
you know, that's
I go the same way.
So, you know, there's some Ellis Island parents. They've got a baby.
White Collar is the father.
Oh, yeah, Matt Bomer.
Again, somebody making, like, you were in Magic Mike, man. Solid choice in
he's
roles.
In Magic Mike. He's in, what was the, Taylor Kitsch, the HBO movie.
The Normal Heart.
Normal Heart.
He's pretty good in that, yeah.
Oh, what a devastating motion picture that was.
Yeah, that was
you're
not
going to work the next day after you watch that one.
A cold cup of coffee and a cigarette for you.
I didn't see this. Now, is this like someone gets a sad disease or something?
The saddest of disease.
HIV.
I honestly said that not knowing what it was about. I'm serious.
Yeah, it's an adaptation of the Larry Kramer play, you know, about the AIDS epidemic.
HBO puts out an AIDS movie every year.
They actually kind of do. You're actually not wrong. Like every other year at least.
Well, because what was last year?
I forget.
Well, I guess if technically last year was Normal Heart, yeah, 2014. Normal Heart.
So they just got to get one on the books
but
this
there
year.
There was, what, like Angels in America?
That was 2003.
That was a while
ago. Yeah, that was a while ago.
That was like yesterday to me.
There's all these goddamn AIDS movies every year. Just getting bombarded with AIDS movies, Eric Siska.
Is there AIDS in Olive Kittredge? No, probably not.
Eric apologized. It was actually Eric Movie talking.
Yes, yes, it was.
So, yeah, Matt Bomer and his wife bring a baby to Ellis Island, and Matt Bomer's character has, you know, bronchitis or not bronchitis, something much
like
worse.
Polio it's like, or something like that.
Some sort of pulmonary something or other.
Consumption yes, is what they probably. Keep calling it.
Well, no, he has the pulmonary because the girl has consumption. He has, like, a pulmonary disease. It's
but his, didn't he, like, his yeah, his parents had something too, right?
Well, no, the parents have a pulmonary disease. He doesn't have anything.
All right.
Yeah, Colin Farrell's
right,
fine.
He's clean bill of health.
Right, yeah. So they say, like, oh, can we just leave the baby here? They're getting turned away.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, no, you know, get back on the boat. So they steal a model ship that's inside this immigrant boat, which, okay, whatever. There's like he sneaks into this gorgeous ship room.
Like a stateroom.
Yeah, like the outside of this is like a grody Russian immigrant ship. But then on the inside, there's this beautiful stateroom, like one of the nicest rooms on the Titanic.
It's like Jean-Luc Picard's coming around the corner in this
finished
room.
Mahogany on the
oh,
side.
Oh, say, Mr. Data, you noticed my model boats, did you?
That's of the Pinafore.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Jean-Luc Picard loves the HMS Pinafore.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how much.
Gilbert and Sullivan for life. So
got
they,
that tattooed on his on the back of his head.
Yeah.
So they got they take this boat, they hollow out part of it, like they cut out part of this nice model ship, and then stuff this baby in it, and then just like dump it back into New York Harbor.
Get into the sea.
Like, best of luck, baby. Whatever.
Either drowned or shrug.
And then it's just it's nothing. Cut to whatever, 30 years later, however old Colin Farrell's supposed to be.
Yeah, in most of his movie. Well, I mean, it turns out he's ageless.
Well, not just yet, he's not.
Yeah, but he's too old. I will point that out.
He's too old what?
I feel like this movie could have been done. Like, we'll get into it, but it feels kind of like a, you know, it's like a fantasy fairy tale. I thought maybe like, and also the way some of the dialogue is with him and the love story. And it's like, oh, I never loved anyone like this before.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been like 17.
Yeah,
right.
It is kind of like a Romeo and Juliet type thing.
Or like a Huck Finn thing or something. Or Tom Sawyer. Like, this shouldn't be a 45-year-old man going, oh, I never loved like this before.
He is supposedly 38 years old. I don't know that I buy that, but that's his IMDb age. And Lady Sybil's like 24 when this movie's getting made. So when that raunch-tacular sex scene's happening later on, I was like, ew, lecherous Colin Farrell.
Red, gross.
So he, I guess, lives in Grand Central Station in the attic? Question mark.
Well, I mean, I thought he was a terrorist at first because he's. I mean, you're breaking into the attic of the Grand Central Station. And apparently, nobody's. You're not Hugo,
dude. I was thinking a lot about Hugo, and it's like if this was a sequel to Hugo, like he emigrates to the United States. And then just starts living in Grand Central. And then, like, he's just grown up, still living in a train station.
And Ben Kingsley's just teaching him stuff.
Yeah, totally. Why not? Cohen still chasing after him.
Sure.
It'd be a better movie.
Oh, my God. Well, that's, like, I'm sorry. If you base something in 2014 and a person is just, like, sneaking up into the rafters of the fucking Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
Where I see the most military people in all of New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I see the most there. Listen, and I'm counting LaGuardia.
Listen, you know, folks, you know, coming to tour NYC, if you want to see machine guns up close and personal, come to Grand Central Terminal because they're just everywhere.
The very best machine guns. Like, it's,
Penn Station's got some good machine guns too.
Yeah,
now.
I mean,
you know, I don't want to sell it short.
Those are more automatic rifles. I feel like they actually have machine guns in it.
Well, yeah, so it is impossible that he's living in Grand Central Station in 2014. But back in 1914, where we're at, or 1917, 16. Thank yes. you. So he's living there then, too.
What a coward, man. The war's on, right?
So he's living up there. He's a thief, basically, is the deal. He's like a grown-up, artful dodger.
But he's tired of it. He doesn't really...
He's tired of the life.
April 6, 1917. Okay.
So the U.S. Oh, the U.S. was not involved yet.
But honestly, we're in the middle of a fucking polio epidemic.
What are you saying? Like, he should have had better things to do?
Yeah, I mean, just get out of town. Like, you go to a place where it's not, like, so easy. Like,
well, what's weird about this movie is it never leaves New York City. And the feeling that I get is, like, it's the world of Grand Theft Auto.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all that world is that one city.
Yeah.
Because they're always talking about, like, oh, if I can get to the edge of the city, maybe I can get out of here. And, like, every time someone tries to leave New York, there's, like, a barrier or, like, something happens and they get pulled back in.
There's some vague, again, we'll get to the judge, but the judge and God have an agreement. You can't go north of the city because that's God's territory.
That's God's country.
Right there.
That's the thing. It's like, you just can't do it. And, like, Russell Crowe really wants it because he wants to butcher this kid.
Right.
But, yeah, you can't go. It is mostly in New York. It's almost all in New York.
This kid.
Yeah.
Now, this is why it should be played by a child. Because also Colin Farrell is running away from Russell Crowe.
Right. When we're introduced to Colin Farrell, he's running away from Russell Crowe.
Playing Pearly.
Pearly, who's like this leprechaun gangster.
Yeah.
Dude, it is a heart-titty-tar Irish accent. Like, it is horrendous. It's so bad.
Apparently, this guy raised this immigrant boy that is played by 38-plus-year-old Colin Farrell.
Yes. And
he's running away from his stepdaddy at the start of the movie.
Right. Yeah. And so there's some sort of... Like, Russell Crowe's a crime boss. So it's like... I guess maybe he told him, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I think he might also owe him money,
doesn't want to do it. He just is done with it.
And he's like nobody quits. Tar-ta-ti-tar.
Hard.
It's so bad.
Where's me lucky charm?
No.
It's so bad.
What you think Chris is doing right now, it's actually, he's playing it down compared to what it actually
is. I was trying to be a little bit more respectful, you know, to my Irish brethren, but
yes,
it's so bad.
It is so ridiculous.
But that was the funny thing, was because when I was hearing Colin Farrell talk in the movie, I was like, oh, okay, they're letting him use his accent. That's fine. And then at one point, he's telling Lady Sybil, like...
Well, he's Australian, right?
Colin Farrell? No, he's Irish.
Oh, no, I was confusing the two.
Russell Crowe is Australian.
Yes, yes.
But so Colin Farrell is just using his regular voice. And I was like, oh, that's weird, because he was dropped in New York Harbor... You know,
that is weird.
And he's talking about how he was raised in Brooklyn.
But he was raised by Pearly, who's a leprechaun from the space.
They don't tell you that, though, until an hour into this movie.
Yeah.
Because finally, Russell Crowe's like, oh, yeah, I raised him, tar-ta-ta-tar. And you're just like, oh, wait, what, you did? Oh, that's why? So it's like, because Colin Farrell wanted to use his real accent, Russell Crowe had to do a shitty one because they had to somehow explain how an orphan that was brought up in Brooklyn has an Irish accent. That's the lengths we're going to?
And I mean, I don't know what the accent is exactly that Bomber is doing in the beginning. It certainly isn't Irish.
They're Russian.
They're Russians? Okay.
Because on the ship that you see...
Oh, it's the, yes.
It's
the,
there's
yeah,
there's
the
Cyrillic all over it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
They're Russian immigrants.
Because I just thought, I mean, I was like vague European again.
So he's playing a Russian who grew up in Brooklyn to speak Irish.
Raised by an Irishman.
Oh.
That's how silly we're getting here. Yeah. That was the thing that I was thinking, like, why would you do that? Like, Colin Farrell isn't the best at covering up his accent, but I'm so used to it at this point that's fine. If you want to make Russell Crowe use his accent, you know, I get there's an Australian gangster in Brooklyn. I don't know. Fine. Whatever.
That sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a Crocodile Dundee-esque adventure.
But I mean, as far as accents go, I mean, Warwick Davis does fucking circles around him. Like, as
you're
the
talking
leprechaun.
About, I was going to say, as yes.
As the course, leprechaun, as the he leprechaun. Does, like, circles. Like, this
you,
is
I
a
thought you meant as Wicket.
Or as Willow.
So... as he's running away from Russell Crowe, he's like, man, how am I going to get out of this jam? Sure wish I had like a car or something that I could get out of here. Oh, what's this? Oh, a majestic, magical white horse seeming to appear out of nowhere. Well, how about that? And then this horse bows to him. And I was like, oh, wait, it's a magic horse. And then this movie just takes off. Like, yep. He is calling this horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hey, horse, get over here, horse.
What do you want?
Now, you said in the book, Chris, that you hear the horse's inner monologue.
You can tell, like, the book begins with them, like, talking about the horse, and the horse is thinking, and you know the horse's thoughts. It's not necessarily talking.
It's third-person narration.
Yeah, so you can hear that the horse has thoughts and is thinking about things, and it is indeed a guardian angel for this idiot.
Right, it's thinking about hay.
Yeah.
Now, is this movie better or worse if you hear the horse's thoughts?
I mean, better, because like be I imagine fun. The horse is just like, fine. What do you want me to fly now?
I would say it all rests on who you get to voice that horse, right? If you get Danny DeVito to voice that horse, that's probably going to be pretty bad. But maybe you just get like, I mean, let's stick with Irish people. If you get Liam Neeson to voice that horse.
Oh, I would believe it.
Right?
Yeah.
He's like, you're going to break into that house. Yeah. Hey, Colin Farrell, you're going to break into that house. Peter. What's his name? Peter something?
Peter Lake.
Hey, Peter Lake, you're going to break into that house, Peter Lake.
You know, but you know who you have to get is Brendan Gleeson.
Oh, yeah.
Big ol', like, yeah.
Yeah, you
a
want
big
that
friendly voice. Yeah.
Barrel-chested Brendan Gleeson voice on a horse. You nailed it.
Yeah.
That would make this movie better. So, gist of it, long story short, Russell Crowe's trying to have him murdered. Colin Farrell is trying to do one last like round of robberies to work up, you know, enough cash flow to then take him and horse out of town, get out of the business.
Speaking of which, did we mention that the horse then, like, he gets on the horse and it flies over this fence to elude Pearlie and his henchmen?
Yeah, the horse.
Black coats.
Yeah, they're just black coat mobsters. The horse, it's not so much flying as it is a Mario super jump.
Right. Yeah.
It super jumps over this fence.
Because it does fly eventually, but it's working up to it. That's kind of the climax.
Well, because, I mean, listen, you got a flying horse in your movie, man. You want to keep that secret for as long as you can. You don't want that to be like the first 10 minutes of your movie.
And can we talk, holy, because if you've ever complained about a J.J. Abrams movie, get ready for the flares of the century.
Oh, man. Oh, it's everywhere.
Everywhere. Because, every shot.
Because they use lens flares and other like shiny things to signify like when magic is happening. And let me tell you
which
guys.
Which is always.
It's a pretty magical movie. It's a flare fest, man. It's all over this movie.
And it just hurts your eyes. I'm like J.J. Abrams does it once or twice. Like, it's not crazy.
I rewatched Into Darkness recently because I just got the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's there. Whatever.
Yeah.
In this movie, it's everywhere. It is everywhere. Just when you think you have a shot without a lens flare in it, something flares up. Every time that happens.
And it's like, even when, like, if there's like a candelabra somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's just for the hell of it.
It's so stupid.
Got to get behind it.
I guess.
You
just have to accept it all, I guess.
Yeah, behind the candelabra. Yeah.
Oh, hey, there's your last year HBO AIDS movie.
Right?
There
we go.
So he goes out on this one final burgle spree with horse, right? And they're in Central Park, and he's like, "Oh, horse, what a haul we have! Let's get out of the five boroughs." And horse refuses to move.
Yeah.
And horse is just looking straight on at this townhouse, and he's like, "No, horse, you're getting greedy, man. Like, that's a greedy ass horse. I'm not. You know, the sun's coming up.
One last job.
Yeah. It's seriously, the horse is like, no." One last job before we leave town. You got to do it.
Look, you can find hay pretty easily, but you can't find oats very easily. And I'm an oat horse, as it turns out. So you're going to have to go in there and get some fucking money.
Yeah.
See? We were missing so much from the book.
Dude, I want to do two commentaries to this movie. A regular commentary and then a commentary where we just do what the horse is thinking.
Oh.
Right?
Man, wow. I really want to do this now.
So we've been set up with the idea that Lady Sybil, you know, she's got consumption. She's going to bite the bullet pretty soon. She's going to bite the big one.
And I did not know what that was. And I went to the Wikipedia page of Winter's Tale, and you click on consumption, and it takes you to tuberculosis.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So she's, you know,
filling everyone in at home.
She's, you know, she's got the fever and whatnot. Yeah. She does a lot of sleeping out on their roof in the winter, I guess,
she's got
the idea.
This impossible tent up.
Yeah.
It's like the Spiegel tent from the South Street Seaport.
Yep.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. It's a very local reference.
You're totally right, though. It's a huge tent, and she just lives in it. She's got, like, a watering hole out on the roof. Like, she gets in like cold water and goes in cold environments to like lower her fever and stuff.
Yeah, because she's constantly sweating and constantly sick and constantly has this fever and is basically dying. And of course, he sees fresh prey.
Yeah.
Well, what's amazing is when we're set up with this whole thing, her father is William Hurt, and they set up like, the family is going a little bit upstate. They're going to the lake for the weekend, right? And they're like, okay.
The Peter Lake.
Yeah. So you know, God damn it. So you know, like, okay, oh, house is going to be empty. Colin Farrell's going to come burgle it. Oh, right. But then they're like Lady Sybil's like, hey, everyone's going up to the lake today, but I'm going to go up tomorrow. And I was like, oh, that's weird. So we cut to like, Colin Farrell, he's outside the house. We're inside this townhouse, and she's like having a hard time. And I was thinking, like, did they purposely leave a day early, hoping that she might just die alone? And they'd be like, oh, she didn't get here. Guess she finally died.
Yeah, like, I think that's what's happening.
Why would you, if you know your daughter is like near death from consumption, and she's getting these fevers, and she's doing poorly, why would you leave her home alone to deal with that while you go up to your lake house?
And it's not like she has a doctor's appointment or anything. It's no. just like a fucking, I'm going to hang out. I want the house to myself for
exactly.
a day.
It makes no sense other than she's the only one in this house when Colin Farrell comes to burgle it.
I guess because she wants to walk around naked for one day.
Yeah.
One day in that beautiful mansion. She didn't get to do it before.
Right. So
that's the bucket list.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Walk around the house nude.
She's getting towards the end of that list, BT dubs.
Right.
But.
But for the time, walking around the house nude, you may laugh now because you're probably listening to this walking around the house nude. But in 1916, they'd stone you to death for that.
Oh, easily.
In 1960?
16.
Oh, 16.
Yeah.
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 I mean, yeah,
you because never know.
It's especially if you're a lady, there were a lot stricter laws about
ladies. I mean, William Hurt's a New York City philanthropist, so yeah, I mean, he's got an iron fist in that house.
He's a fat cat, man. He's got some dough on him. So he's burgling this house. She's there walking around naked out on the roof or whatever's going on.
He's got a pretty sweet Batman.
Dude. What is with this grappling hook? Like, they show, it's a shot of like this patio or this balcony or whatever, and then all of a sudden a grappling hook comes up, and I was like, come on, just have him pick the lock on the back door. What? The sun is up also. It's totally the morning at this point, and he's Batmaning up the side of this Manhattan townhouse.
Also, broad daylight.
Yeah, it's like right next to FAO Schwartz. It's like a tall building. You can't throw that far.
No, you can't. Do you think the horse helped him throw that?
Yeah.
Maybe the horse wings.
Fine, I got it. Hold on. I get him in my mouth, and then I'm going up. 1, 2, 3.
See, if they had revealed at this point that the horse could fly, just kind of flutter your wings a little bit and fly him up to that terrace.
Right, yeah.
Lazy-ass horse. He wants him to burglarize things, but he doesn't want to help out with it.
Right.
No. That's a bad crime partner.
Yeah, he's always there for when you're talking about the money.
The horse is just like, oh, I'm just a getaway man.
But we split that shit two ways.
Look, I came up with the plan. You're enacting it. I get it. But I figured it all out.
I'm the brains.
I cased the joint for crying out loud.
So she catches him because he steps on a squeaky floorboard.
But he's also like so entranced with her. She's just like, oh, there's a beautiful lady there.
Yeah, he's kind of just staring at her while she manically plays the piano.
Which is Brahms.
Brahms.
Which recently famously in There Will Be Blood, I believe.
Towards the end. I think you're right
I
on think, that.
I mean, it's not a piano in that composition, but...
I mean, my classical music knowledge is...
I don't know. It just reminded me of it, and I was like, oh, to be back with Daniel Plainview, to not be watching this movie.
Instead of Peter Lake?
Yes.
Yeah, I would love to see Pearly versus Plainview.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Dude. Plainview would take him to task.
Oh, yeah. He would drink his soul.
Rip his head off, drink the blood, and then just like play with the brains just for the fuck of it.
So they meet, and it's like love at first sight. They have like a gigantically long horseshit conversation about nothing and everything all at once. Who could be listening?
And that's most of the movie.
Yep, it's just
them
talking
about nonsense.
Gibberish. Just silly words. Just baby gibberish.
About the stars and the wings and the light
and miracles.
Who gives a fuck?
It's so dumb.
And that's because, now see, this is when I'm like, these characters should be younger.
Yeah.
Because I could see a teenager.
Being stupid, yes.
Waxing whimsical, if you will. But to see an aged old man.
Yeah.
Doing this.
Yeah, it's pretty silly.
Perched on Alzheimer's. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense. And you wonder exactly... Because also, you'll notice there's a lot of, like, weird angles. Like, when the second time the horse flies, they have, like, a weird close shot on the horse's neck. Because I don't think they had the money to show the wings again.
Either that or it's just a poorly made movie.
That's also possible. But like also when, we'll get to it, but when Pearly slits that poor kid's throat.
Oh, yeah.
You don't actually see the throat getting slit. It's just like him going up, making the movement, and then blood somewhere.
Right. Well, it's insanely cheap with bad special effects. Again, don't make these kinds of movies if you don't have the money for it. Frankenstein, looking at you.
Or just, like, plan your shot better.
Yeah. Know how to direct a movie, I guess, is the idea. I mean, I think it's one of the first things he's ever directed. He's a screenwriter.
I think it is his debut, actually.
There were a lot of directors that tried to make this movie, including Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
Who owned the rights to this book for quite some time.
The book is huge. The book, I think it's considered one of the best American books of the 80s by like, a long shot.
Really?
Yeah. It's a great book, but... It's a hard one to, it's really hard to do this book, I would think.
So we go back to Russell Crowe, and at some point here, this is the scene that you were talking about. He goes into like some sort of restaurant and everyone's like clearing their table, like offering it up to him. You know, he's a real hot shot kind of guy, right? And they're like, all right, here's the deal. Like, we're looking for Peter Lake. He escaped and we're going to kill him, blah, blah, blah. And then he like orders some impossible dish.
Eating like, he's eating a bunch of oysters.
Yes.
Like oysters upon oysters.
Which, yeah, I could do that too.
Maybe.
And, you know, it used to be called the Big Oyster before the Big Apple.
That's true.
But then we polluted every waterway we had.
Yeah.
And then he wants the dish he asks for is a butterflied bald eagle.
And he's, like, giving instructions about how to make it, this, that, and the other thing. And this waiter is like, hey, asshole, you know, I'm not serving a bald eagle tonight. That's not happening. And this is where we learn that Russell Crowe, not only is his character Pearly a bad guy and, like, a villain and a hoodlum, he's also a demon. Welcome back to Demon Month on We Hate Movies. What the hell? Surprise demonic shit in this movie. Did not see it coming.
I didn't either. It's his scar starts glowing and he's just like... He gets like full Irish and that's when the...
It's like he gets like really bad acne for a minute.
And then his face just kind of opens though. And like he yells at this waiter and then just murders him. And I was like, oh no. Demon movie.
And then he does like a Jackson Pollock. He just like is in a fugue state.
Oh yeah.
And he's just painting this shit.
He paints like a portrait of what turns out to be Lady Sybil. I'm like,
you think with this, it's Lady Sybil?
Oh, right. Yeah, right, pardon me. Yeah.
Well, with the blood, right? He's like scribbling on the tablecloth.
He draws like a girl with red hair.
But like, if you like, there's a shot later where you do understand how it could be. But the first shot where you see this thing, it's a red circle and another red circle with a red line coming out of it.
You're painting with red. You're not going to get a blonde lady. You're going to get a red-haired lady. Although, if they looked at it a few hours later, maybe they'd think they're after a brunette.
It's just dried and it's shitty, cracking dried blood on the napkin.
What? Don't you see what I'm trying to show you?
It's so stupid. And then Kevin Corrigan is like his goon sidekick.
Romeo.
Named Romeo, which I thought at first when he's like, Romeo. And I was like, oh, no. Now he's just going to be talking about Shakespeare for some reason.
He's just been quoting it.
Ugh. Yeah, but then it turns out it's actually Kevin Corrigan's name. And you're like, all right. Whatever.
Kevin Corrigan's in a lot of bad movies, but every time I'm like, oh, Kevin Corrigan.
Keep stirring that sauce, Mikey.
Poor Corrigan. He's just waiting for the next Scorsese movie. He's probably going to be in silence, too.
Do you think he signed on when Scorsese had the rights?
Probably.
He was the last. For some reason, he just continued on.
Y'all stay with the project. It's fine.
He was probably originally going to play like Pearlie, and then like he because Akiva
and
took
Kevin
the helm.
Kevin Corrigan as Pearlie, the main villain of the movie. Maybe. I don't know.
I would have enjoyed it more.
Kevin Corrigan would have done a better job. So whatever. So they have this big like thing. She says like, I'm dying, you know, you can't really get near me. I kind of got TB, you know, bummer.
Oh, but the true love.
Yeah. Oh, man, we're just talking about true love, love at first sight, eternal bliss.
Love in the stars.
A kiss that can return you. It's a bunch of bullshit.
It's like a Sleeping Beauty or something. Like, don't worry when you're about to die, I'll give you a good smooch and you'll come back
and
to
that'll
life.
That'll be it. You'll be fine.
That's all it'll take.
What?
I'm going to kiss that tuberculosis right out of you, baby. Here we go.
Oh, my God. Around this point is when Colin Farrell meets up with a friend of his at the docks, played by Graham Greene, who's now going to add an element of Native American mystic hokum to his apartment.
Because why not? Why not?
Well, because that's why we get Greene in for anything.
That he's not doing that in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's true.
That horse is your spirit guide.
And you're just like, all right, thank you. It's literally one scene. It's a walk and talk. He explains the Native American side of things. And then he's like, oh, by the way, sometimes the form, you know, the spirit can take the form of several things. A dog, a this, a that.
So you're just telling me that it's my spirit animal.
Well, that's what he says. Yeah. Or even a big, great white horse. And the horse is right there like, how's it going? Okay. And then we see like Colin Farrell just look like, oh.
And it's such a toss-away. Like he's one of the baymen that adopted Farrell when he showed up on the shores from the boat.
So he's kind of supposed to be like from like a fishing culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's more, again, the book does a much better job of this. But he was brought up as a fisherman. They became a mechanic, and then he went into Pearlie's gang.
Right.
But this is just kind of like a throwaway line. Yeah, I was kind of your dad.
Yeah, it's seriously, this scene is total tops 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Graham Greene's out of this movie. There's got to be deleted scenes or something.
Well, I just don't think they gave, like, there are scenes in this movie that it's just kind of like, let's get the plot a-going. Like, let's keep it a-going. Let's see what's going to happen. What the hell? Why not?
Yeah.
And a lot of it doesn't, I mean, it's certainly not interesting.
Yeah, you know, that could go on the poster.
Yeah. It's certainly not interesting. A Winter's Tale.
But, like, what? Yeah, it's like, we already got the thing, like, oh, apparently Russell Crowe was some type of father figure to him, but now we have to go back and see his other father figure, and we had to see his actual father abandon him, and it's just like
just one after the other, man.
I mean, but you're almost 40 years old.
Well, then William Hurt's going to be like a fourth almost father figure,
yes,
when he's meeting the family, right? So The whole thing is, whatever, this movie's longer than Star Wars. So what happens is Russell Crowe, like, makes the connection. They find out, like, oh, you know, he says, like, it's a redheaded woman in New York City. Figure it out, goon squad. So this one guy is like, well, say, that woman's got red hair.
Might as well get her killed.
Yes. And it's Lady Sybil. And it turns out that this hoodlum was right, you know, but it's a pretty big guess. So Russell Crowe, like, she's leaving to go to the lake house. It's the next day, whatever. Russell Crowe's outside, and he's like, okay, you know what I'm going to do to piss off Colin Farrell? I'm going to murder you, is what's going to happen. Well, doesn't Colin Farrell swoop in on this horse and pick her up off the ground, like, right before she's about to be murdered by Russell Crowe?
They go full Pegasus.
The horse takes off, and you're just like, oh, wait. So it's not just a horse that can super jump. It's a horse that can fly.
And glide as well.
It's whatever. So this horse flies them to the lake house.
Right. No, it doesn't have, yeah, it doesn't have actual wings. It has, like, phantom wings. So I kept on just waiting for those wings just to disappear and just this horse to plummet to the earth. Right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
A bunch of people at once said, I don't believe in fairies, and the horse just died.
That'd be great.
Well, I mean, it's all this, you know, it's the light bullshit. Like, it's the horse's wings are made of, like, reflective light.
Am I to believe, Chris, that the Lord God put wings on a horse in this movie?
Yes. Why wouldn't you believe that?
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm, like, watching this movie anyway. I'm pretty gullible as it is.
But also, the devil also can light, as we see with Russell Crowe and the jewels that make the map.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Roz chamber room or whatever from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that's right. Russell Crowe lines up, like, a bunch of, like, diamonds and jewels.
Yeah, he's got the staff of Ra, and if the light hits it at a certain angle.
The moon, like, hits these jewels, and all of a sudden this cityscape lights up, and that it tells him, like, where Colin Farrell is.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's Grand Central.
And that happens once. He can't do it again, apparently.
Yeah, why wouldn't you bring that gimmick back?
Why not just have that sack of rubies with you at all times? Just like, all right, I lost him.
Yeah, I don't.
Here we go.
Yeah, I don't get Russell Crowe using this ability once. That's a good point, because it's just like,
the whole movie, he's looking for him. That's the whole point of the movie, is that Pearlie wants to kill him.
But it's also just weird just to do that and then quickly move on from it. It's like, what the hell did
Maybe
I
he
just
doesn't
watch?
Do it that often, because even Kevin Corrigan, he sees him do it. And, you know, you're led to believe that he's been working for Pearlie for a while. Like, he does this parlor trick in front of Kevin Corrigan, and he's like, whoa, wait, what?
Wait,
what are you doing? And he's like, just get after him.
I mean, I have jewels. Can I do that? I'm gonna go home. You know what? We'll look for Colin Farrell tomorrow. I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna check this out, see what we got happening here. But also, by the way, when he does, because what happens is when the Pegasus goes over the edge, he's north of the city,
right?
So Russell Crowe first kills Romeo because he fucked it up.
Oh, right.
Right, because you got Lord Vader tactics in this.
And yeah, totally. You get one shot, and you mucked it up, man, so you get assassinated.
So now I've got Roy as my number two.
Yeah.
Named Roy.
It's just some dude. Like, Kevin Corrigan got murdered and thrown off a cliff for some dude to replace him.
Some dude with a bad beard.
And yeah.
Then he says, I gotta go talk to the judge.
Right. So let's all remember that the demons are not allowed north of the city.
Yes.
That's the rule. So he says, I gotta go talk to the judge. We'll leave it there for a second. Colin Farrell meets the family, right? He's like, hey, I rescued your daughter. You left her home alone for some reason.
I don't know why you would do that.
She's got weeks to live.
I came in here to rob the place, and I found a sweet girl about 20 years younger than myself.
I took better care of her than you did. I don't know.
By the way, one of the lines in this romance between these two, she says, I'm 21 years old, and I've never been kissed on the mouth.
And he's just like,
I've got to fix.
Well, I could kiss you on the mouth. Is that
You're leaving me a clue?
Is it okay if I'm constantly sweating and feeling all weird?
And are you actually attracted to this haircut?
Yeah, he's got a shitty haircut.
Like a mushroom,
movie.
But like shaved underneath mushroom.
That's the thing.
It's a slicked back mushroom cut is what it is.
What's brilliant about this haircut is it was fashionable in 1916, and it's fashionable in 2014.
In Williamsburg only.
It totally came back, though, that haircut.
It's huge.
It's back in a big, bad way, man.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah, dude, open your eyes.
So William Hurt, like, takes this guy down a peg.
Yeah.
So, like, he meets with Colin Farrell in the sitting room, and he's like, so, you look like a real scumbag. You look like a thief. You look like you're probably pretty uneducated, and you might have been meeting my daughter because you were burglarizing my house. And Colin Farrell's just like, yep, you got me.
And I kind of stopped her from being killed.
Yeah. Oh, remember that one detail? This mobster was going to cut her throat in the middle of the street.
Oh, and man, and talk about the worst lines. I mean, it's rife throughout this whole movie.
You could pick any second of this movie. There's a bad line. And he's ready to kick him out of this house, too. He's like,
oh, too sweet.
He's like, keep your answer brief. And if any of my family comes into this room, button up. And Colin Farrell's like, all right, listen, I am a thief. I'm also kind of a mechanic. I was on my last job when my horse told me I should rob your house.
Hey, cut it out.
The horse is outside, like, looking in the window, just like, shut up.
He's just gonna, like, draws his hoof across his neck.
Well, yeah, like, right before that, I did do a lot of drugs. Well, what's that have to do with anything?
Well, that's my theory about this movie, is that this is like, you know, kind of around the nick time.
Uh-huh.
And heroin, you can get heroin in the drugstore, you can get cocaine anywhere. So you're like, I think everybody's tripping balls thinking they're demons and angels.
That's very possible. Or this is all just her crazy fever dream before she dies.
That's also possible.
My brain is not working right. I've got the sicknesses. And it's just like firing in these weird ways. And she's just like, oh, there's a devil. That man's with the mafia. He's a devil.
She does say something to her little sister about, like, she likes the like fever dreams that she gets because, like, she finds them in. This is when she's talking about the light, and she's like, I love when I have these potentially fatal fevers because I start seeing light in all sorts of new ways. And I'm like, your brain is cooking itself.
Yes.
Like, your body is cooking your brain.
Go into the tunnel, head to the light.
Just get it over with.
Yes, please.
If you wait any longer, it's not going to be that much fun.
And, you know, around here, we're introduced to her little sister.
Right. This is a precocious little turd, if I ever saw one.
Two precocious girls in this movie.
Two turds in one?
Yeah. Well, no, there's this one, and then we'll get to the other one.
Oh, I thought you were saying that two actresses played this.
No, it's not a twin thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so this little girl.
These creepy twins.
These creepy-ass twins.
This movie.
You know, I would like it more if there were creepy twins.
Get some Shining twins in here. Why not?
Yeah, spook it up.
You
get
have
it,
to
get
spook
it spooky.
Up this movie, man. Get it a little bit spooky.
You got angels and demons, I guess, running around.
Yeah, and you would think it'd be a little bit more scarier.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be, like, what they choose to make supernatural is weird.
Well, the faces, that's it. Like, it's really just Russell Crowe's face.
Faces and flying horses.
The judge's face.
Right. We're almost there.
It's killing me, really.
So, but another one of the worst, this conversation between William Hurt and Colin Farrell. I mean, it's one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
But another thing is, he's talking about how much he loves his daughter. I love your daughter this way, that way. He goes, well, you understand, you know, she's got the consumption. You know, she doesn't have much longer to live. Like, how do you feel about my daughter's condition? And he says, it's an official question. It's a real question.
Yeah.
One person asks another person. Colin Farrell says to him, he's like, hey, do you think it's possible to love someone so much that they just wouldn't die? And William Hurt's like,
do you have consumption too?
Is your brain also frying?
Have you been seeing light in new ways as well?
Yeah. Do you have consumption, or are you just stupid? Is that your problem?
And then he says, like, he ties the thief thing back in because he's like, don't you think it would be okay if I just stole one life? And I'm like, oh my God.
Just stop it.
Just shut the fuck up.
Stop
dude.
What you're doing right now.
It's so terrible.
That sounds like a threat of murder.
Yeah, I'm going to steal her life away, right? Like, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take that.
Take your daughter.
I'm going to take her life, take it, and put it in my pocket. It's so bad.
Put her down by the aisle.
Love someone so much, they can't die.
Incorrect, no.
God damn it. Just remember that, though. Remember that question that he asked.
Yeah, it's
important.
Because this movie's dumb enough to answer it. So, Russell Crowe gets to the judge's office. Presumably the judge is his boss or, you know, whatever. We don't really know yet.
Yeah, you were going up the totem pole of the criminal organization.
Right. So we see the judge, and the judge is sitting in a dark room and, you know, not a lot of lights on. And it's like, what can I help you with?
It's a single mattress. He's got like a light bulb above him.
And he's like, all right, here's the deal, judge. I need you to lift that ban on demons not being able to go north of the city or outside of the city or whatever. Because I really, really want to kill Colin Farrell.
He just wants a hall pass. It's not even like, let's lift the ban because then then he has to talk to God.
This demon is asking this judge if that he can go and screw some other woman just for a weekend, right?
Yeah, pretty much is the deal,
do you remember that movie,
Him
Hall
and
Pass?
Owen Wilson are going to go off to the north and fuck a bunch of girls, and then he's going to kill Colin Farrell, too, while he's up there.
So the judge is like, you know what, let's talk about this in better light. And he pulls the string to turn this light bulb on, and standing before me on my TV is Will Smith playing the devil. Come on.
Oh my God.
There's so much that's terrible with this, starting with the fact that he's dressed like Will Smith just going out for the day in Los Angeles.
No, he went out for a coffee and then did this performance.
He's wearing a hip t-shirt.
Jimi Hendrix. He has Jimi Hendrix t-shirt on.
Oh, I didn't notice it was
It's a blazer with a Jimi Hendrix t-shirt and a vest.
Oh, mercy.
He's timeless.
That is so dumb.
So the devil loves Jimi Hendrix.
Who doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, by the way, I totally forgot this. Yeah, take a look at it. Slow down your iTunes there, and you'll see it.
Put some jewels in front of your TV so it lights up correctly. Yeah.
Put your rubies and your jades and such.
Dude, I didn't even notice that. I thought he was just wearing a hip T-shirt. It's a Hendrix T-shirt.
You know what? Now my brain is collapsing.
Dude, you got the consumption.
I think I do. I just got it.
Oh, my God.
I did not notice
that. That's so dumb.
It's really bad.
Why didn't anyone care?
Because I
they probably thought it was cool. Or Will Smith suggested it the day of.
Right, and Akivas
were like, I guess that's cool.
Will came up with this great idea in between takes. We had the devil in just, you know, a regular old three-piece suit like the rest of the criminals. It was tinted a little bit red, though.
Sure.
But then Will says, how about I just wear what I'm wearing right now? Oh, and the crew went crazy. Oh, my God.
And, you know, at first I was like, Will, you know, I don't know if that's going to work. And then Will said, well, I'm walking otherwise because I don't give a flying fuck about this.
Dude. It's so dumb. Also, he's got gigantic, like, diamond stud earrings each year. What? You know what, Will Smith? Get in costume. Everyone else has to look like they're in 1916.
Yeah.
You do, too. Any good devil who wants to walk around the street like devils do would dress the part. Okay.
This is the devil's time. This is his favorite fashion era. You get like a Van Dyke beard going. You got
a top hat. Where's his top hat and some tailcoat?
It's ridiculous. You know what? Like Al Pacino in The Devil's Advocate, he's dressed period appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see him walking around in some sort of, you know,
grizzly bear t-shirt.
I would love to see how that would happen because that movie predates that band. Oh, my God. Wait, so Eric...
I just pulled up a photo. And
Eric has pulled up on the internet ticker. You're totally right, Chris. All you had to do, by the way, is Google Winter's Tale Will Smith. A picture comes up, some sort of fan set photo. And I, by the way, I love Will Smith. I don't have any problem with Will Smith whatsoever.
No, not it, usually I do.
Well,
not.
Well, I mean, he's kind of a weirdo.
Well, yeah.
And those kids. Well,
yeah. For the most part, I don't have a problem with Will Smith.
Will Smith! No, it's not you. We gotta do something about your kids.
The crazy lunatics.
Doc Brown.
They become assholes or something. But he is wearing it's a like shiny silver blazer, or a vest rather. There's a nice blue blazer and a Jimi Hendrix T-shirt. Oh man,
it's unbelievable! It's nuts.
And I was wrong, by the way. I don't think they're stud earrings; they're big hoop earrings.
Oh, okay.
He's getting the pirate look on.
But so since we don't really, Will Smith's not like, you know what? You're not putting horns on me. You're not putting a tail on me.
I'm not asking for horns.
No, I mean, like, I think they ran through it and they're like, what can we do to make you the devil? So
right.
What they decided to do.
Eric also found a GIF of the greatest part of this movie.
Of course.
It's Will Smith's face contorting into, like, fangs.
So,
because he gets angry because he's the devil.
Well, that's the thing is when he gets angry because, like, so Pearlie's like, get me up there. I want to kill Colin Farrell.
Yes.
And Lucifer, or as he calls him at one point, Lou.
Dude, you know what? You can't be casual with your boss, especially when your boss is the devil.
Lucifer, you call him the judge or you call him Lucifer?
Judge, Your Honor, you know.
I don't even get the point of calling him a judge. What's that about?
Because he makes the decisions, I
guess.
Because
he calls the shots. He's the final say.
I think that's it.
Okay.
But like,
I would just call him Mr. Morningstar.
There you go. Well, and that's the thing is he does that classic, like the devil thing where he's like, I was once of his chosen ones, and then I was cast out.
Oh, man, you know what I hate is whiny Lucifers. I get it, man. God cast you out. Just shut up.
Yeah, it's know like how long ago that was?
You big baby, get over it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what, the devil? You're doing okay. You got a pretty sweet army, all sorts of demons running around, JFK's down hanging out at your turf, John Wayne's there.
And you know what? I'm going to disprove hell on this podcast.
Do it.
Because I don't get, another thing I don't get about the devil is I understand, as a fallen angel, maybe he hates humanity and he wants to punish humans. But after so many hundreds of years, what is the point of punishing man for sins against our Lord in heaven? Like, he's basically helping God by punishing sinners.
Yep.
I don't get it.
Well, because he's that, he gets pleasure from torturing the people who do the torturing,
he gets too into it.
So I go to hell. I get tortured by the devil.
Right.
For hundreds of years.
For eternity, dude.
I mean.
Who cares anymore, right? Wouldn't I be like relaxing while I'm getting tortured? Like, I'm used to it.
You probably would get used to it. Like, your tolerance probably builds up.
And don't, you know what? Don't write in saying they zap you back to a time frame where it feels like it hurts again, because I don't care about pain. I've evolved past that. No matter what.
But I'm saying Will Smith cares very much about pain. And like, he wants people to feel pain. And when he's yelling at Russell Crowe, like, he wants him to be scared. Like, he wants him to be fearful. So instead of just, showing him like a burning corpse or I mean, all these things would probably get Russell Crowe off in this movie, but to really put the fear of God in him, he lowers his jaw to like a Coneheads-esque rows of teeth.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really silly.
Dude, he looks like Baraka from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, he absolutely does.
Like, he gets this long, weird, like, amphibian-looking underbite going on.
He doesn't have the cutters, which is, an artistic choice, I understand. You don't want to go full Baraka.
No.
But, like, and he also has a reflection of himself in fire.
Oh, right. He's got...
Right.
It's like Peter Pan's shadow, this horse shit. Oh, my God. This thing's just dancing around up on the wall. God damn it, dude. God damn it
It's
all.
Like worse. Again, I'm going to call back a SADAC here, but like the Terminator 2 original DVD screen, it's those kind of like flames in the background. It's like rippling heat. It's real bullshit.
It's so terrible.
But anyway, he's like, nope, you don't get to do it. You're just going to have to wait for him to come back to you.
Right. Yep. So, great. Thanks for that pointless ass scene.
And son of a bitch. short-lived scene, and we're back to talking.
Just talking. We spend so much time at this lake house with their dumb romance and all this nonsense. They have no chemistry. No one could possibly None. Care any less about these two actors being in these scenes together. It's just the worst.
She wants a last dance, so they go right. to a ball.
Right. The mother says, if you dance, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So she's like, all right, I guess I won't dance. And then Colin Farrell's like,
Footloose?
Everyone in that town's got consumption. You can't dance. We got to outlaw it. All our children are going to die.
Kevin Bacon shows up and massacres the whole town through the power of dance.
They're all just dropping dead, like dropping like flies. Stop dancing! Stop dancing!
A great third act. And the last person alive is John Lithgow crawling on the floor. You did it!
Well, that's what I wanted, because they do. They go to this ball and they dance, and I just imagine John Lithgow like bursting into the ball and taking her by the arm yeah. and like pulling her out.
That's what I don't get. Like, she says several times, my parents don't want me dancing. My mother says if I dance, I'll die. And he's like, all right, it's New Year's Eve.
What do you got to live for anyway, huh? Yeah.
This movie takes place, this is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
It takes place over the holidays. We have Christmas, we go right into the new year, and he's like, it's New Year's Eve, we're going to go to this ball. And they go dancing. At no point is there ever a scene where the parents are like, I don't know about this. Remember how you have consumption and shouldn't exhaust yourself in any way?
Well, because Colin Farrell helped William Hurt with that furnace.
Yeah,
so now you can go kill my kid, I guess.
Right, the furnace in this old building, this old house, their lake house is going to blow.
And
William Hurt is ready to die with this house. It's so stupid. Like, all these, like, Colin Farrell comes back to the house and all these people are running out of the house. They're like, what's going on? They're like, oh, the boiler's going to blow or whatever. You know, we got to all get out of here. Your father's down in the basement. And Colin Farrell, who says multiple times in this movie how much he loves tinkering with machines and how good at it he is, it's like, well, I'll go help him out. You know, so he goes down there and it's William Hurt and this other little mousy looking old man.
Yeah.
And they're trying to fix this thing. And Colin Farrell's like, if it's going to blow, can we just get out of here? And he's like, nah, you know, my mother had this house built. She picked out every piece of furniture. I'm going to go down with the ship. And Colin Farrell literally says, but this is a house. So the old guy runs out and Colin Farrell's like, listen, I can, you know, let me just play around with this for a second. And he fixes this boiler. Like, you think it's going to blow for a second. It doesn't. He fixes this boiler and William Hurt gives him this big hug. Like, you saved my house. Like, listen, William Hurt, just get out of there.
And now, because it's 1916, services rendered for fixing a boiler was a woman. Yet it's their payment. He's got to give him a woman.
Well, I guess you own my daughter now.
But was I the only one who, like, when they show the furnace, was thinking about the Macaulay Culkin when he's scared of the furnace?
Oh, the Home Alone furnace? Oh, yeah. I was also thinking about Steven Weber in the TV movie of The Shining.
Oh, yeah,
where he's going down with the ship in that boiler room.
Yeah.
So they dance. She doesn't die.
But a demon who's working with Russell Crowe, he's pretending to be a waiter at this ball.
Because he can't leave the city because Russell Crowe's a demon only assigned to New York City, you know, the God's country thing. But this other demon can go outside.
Well, I think it's supposed to be back in the city.
Because the guy he gets is converted to human.
Oh, is that
what
happens?
Wings of Desire.
I just love eating things. I'm obsessed with eating. Peter Falk. Jesus Christ, Russell Crowe. You really? I gotta go out to New Paltz. I gotta go up to New. Are you serious? You know how long that's gonna take? We barely have cars yet. You want me to go all the way up there?
Is that how you're gonna play Irish?
All right, fine.
I'm not gonna tell you how to do your thing.
I worked with John Cage. I'm not gonna nitpick. But I'm just telling you.
You know, two words come to mind. I was gonna put it out there for you. That's embarrassing. You do with that what you will. I'll just say, that's embarrassing.
Let me tell you, Gina ain't going to watch this movie either. John, God bless him, he's gone up. But
he's gone up.
Gina, she ain't watching this shit.
You know what? I just love the idea that Peter Falk will decide what to do and what not to do based on if Gina Rollins would watch it or not.
Yeah.
Would Gina she respect me for doing this picture?
I'm not exactly playing an angel, but some sort of stupid demon. It's totally incomprehensible. There's nothing makes sense in this script. Yeah, she'd watch it, though. I think she'd think it was fun. But seriously, though, Russell, that's embarrassing.
At the end of the premiere, and geez, Gina, I thought it was going to be good.
Stop hitting me. Gina, stop hitting me. Jesus Christ, Gina.
Now you're busting my cigar.
Also, Peter Falk's been dead for years. He wouldn't make this movie.
Well, maybe.
You know, in a perfect world, Peter Falk would live forever.
Well,
I've said
if
it
Colin
a
Farrell
times.
Would kiss him on his deathbed.
Holy shit. All right, so this demon, he Wings of Desires himself. He becomes mortal. He goes to this ball, somehow is able to get a job as a waiter, goes in there, and spikes her drink. So she drinks this champagne, and I'm like, oh, she's going to die in this ballroom. It's going to be a big scene. How embarrassing, right? Like, that's embarrassing. But it doesn't happen. They go back home, and I'm like, oh, okay.
It's like, what was that?
Yeah, what was that all about, right? So they go back, and he's like, well, you know, I had a nice night. I guess your dad's still making me sleep out in the barn, even though I saved the house from exploding. So he walks outside, and she's, like, up on her weird, like, impossible patio,
yeah,
taking her clothes off, getting ready to, like, take her ice-cold bath before going to bed. And he's, like, watching her, you know, undress and everything. And then she goes back into the tent, and then he's got the grappling hook, because magically he's just in this room.
Did he use the grappling hook? Because it seems like he's just suddenly there. Right? Yeah.
You don't see the grappling hook. It's terrible editing. He just magically walks in.
I know. I imagine it's the horse in the background. And he's like, yo, you gonna go up there? Fine. I'll bring you up there.
See,
I know you have some arm strength problems after the night, but...
See, that's what you wrote. That's what you thought happened. But I wrote here in my notes, Colin Farrell pole vaulted on his boner to get up there that fast. Because at the time, watching the movie, I was like, how did he get up there? Well, you saw that you know, the brassiere came off.
Right.
And it was just like, ba-boing. He's there.
Well, I mean, he's got to get a running start. So, and I mean, they've got a lot of land, so I can see that happening.
So you're thinking that he used his erection the way Scrooge McDuck bounces on his cane in the DuckTales game?
Precisely.
Okay.
And you know, it's just a theory. It might not be right. But
hey, you know what? We didn't see it. Nothing is impossible.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you. It's not about what the filmmakers intended. It's about what the audience... thought.
Imagine between the cuts.
Exactly.
It's important. So anyway, he's up there and they're about to screws.
It's just this total rando sex scene, just out of nowhere.
And like, you know, like she says, if I get too heated up, I'm gonna die.
I'm a goner.
Do you know what sex is?
Well, he doesn't, because even though Colin Farrell's 38 years old, he's playing the role of a 17-year-old boy, apparently.
Seriously, this movie would have been better if it was a young actor.
Yes,
if they
make
both
a lot
young,
more sense.
Super,
yeah.
And, you know, Colin Farrell's not insanely old, like I was joking. He's old, but he's not insanely old. But
he's literally 7 years older than you.
You know what? You just made me really disappointed in myself. look at the mountains
that you've never pole vaulted with your boner.
No. That I
I'm
have.
Probably gonna die and not
no,
do that.
No, I've done that, but I haven't. You know, have this mountain of a legacy to leave behind. You know,
yes, yeah, SWAT.
I don't have my SWAT yet.
The Recruit.
I don't have the Recruit yet.
Alexander.
I don't have my
A Home at the End of the World.
That movie's a real stink fest.
So if you want Eric movie to be in your movie, I would gladly do any type of those.
Sure.
Man, Eric movie. What a great character. I want to write some like shitty, like LA noir, like you're maybe like an out of work screenwriter.
Yeah, that is Eric movie written all over it.
I'm Eric movie, and I'm at my wit's end.
I'm a jaded, down on my luck script doctor.
Yeah, you don't even write your own scripts. You're just the doctor, man.
They find me in a dingy bar, right? Yep. It's just like, oh, you want that punched up? You want that dialogue redone? You know, like 5 o'clock shadow, smoking.
Yep.
Whiskey.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll take the case.
You know how I like to get paid. And they just shove down a bottle of Wild Turkey.
And it's like, I don't know how I don't know how she died. She was like that when I got here. Because, you know, it's a noir.
Speaking of, she was like that when I got here. They have sexual intercourse and she expires.
Gone.
Instantly. She says something about like, I can see you now. Or it's not something.
We're finally there. Or some bullshit. Like,
her soul's going to go to Alpha Centauri to be a star amongst the alien gods.
And she's just dead. And he's like, oh, fuck. You know, because like, there he is, nude in William Hurt's castle.
But where can he go? Where Willa, right? Is that the name of the...
Is it Lily or Willa?
Whatever.
Willa, the little sister.
The little sister said, like, earlier in the picture, if you bring her to the secret garden and you give her a kiss right on this spot.
Oh, man. They're making like a Sleeping Beauty thing or a Snow White thing or whatever it is. You know, she's like, this little sister literally constructs her sister's deathbed. Is what happens in this movie. And she's like, if she dies when you have sex, just bring her down here. It'll fix it.
And he does.
He totally
and it
does.
Doesn't work. Of course it doesn't.
Dude, she's just a corpse. She's just totally dead. And you know what? Way too much kiss in this corpse.
Oh, yeah.
Look, you kiss a corpse once and you're like, that didn't work. That's the last time you try to bring it back.
It's like he's trying to do CPR or mouth to mouth.
Yeah, but it's just with sexy kissing.
Even if it's my girlfriend, my partner, my wife, whatever. If it's a dead body and it's been a dead body for a while.
Yep.
Because I had to carry that thing through the castle or maybe I pole vaulted my boner again.
No, you know. If there was ever
the body.
If there was ever a time when you don't have a boner, it's when you're carrying your dead girlfriend's corpse down a staircase.
You know, I'm going to stop you right there. Not necessarily.
You're right. This is the world of Winter's Tale. Nothing's impossible. There is a flying horse.
So he gets down there with this corpse. And I mean, it's got to be at least 20 minutes. This is a dead, cold body.
She's starting to stiffen up.
Yeah. I'm like... Okay, like are you sure a peck on the cheek won't do it?
Nope. Like slobber tan.
Okay, just like to the lips, right? Tongue, no tongue, right? Ugh.
So
it's like her mouth is dry at this point.
He sucked all the saliva out.
It tastes like dead. Very good.
So she's dead, and they have the funeral, and she's buried in Brooklyn, and. Colin Farrell attends from afar.
Yeah.
He takes a walk amongst the tombstones.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, the little sister sees him and she's like, ah, bummer. He's probably not going to stay in our lives. And Colin Farrell then just doesn't die. And we cut to 2014 and he's like kind of pseudo homeless. He's back living at Grand Central.
He's not homeless. He's got like a place.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's got a place and he's got a not better haircut.
It's just longer, grown out. He looks like a pirate.
Yeah, he's kind of like, I mean, he's got like an Urban Outfitters hoodie, a jacket with the hoodie underneath it.
Right, it's like an I. Frankenstein fashion.
A bit, yes. Yeah. It actually is exactly like an I. Frankenstein kind of wardrobe.
Oh, wait a second.
If you're doomed to walk the earth, you get the memo. You know what to do.
It's, right. You know, a good tweed jacket and that hoodie.
But we totally forgot like how this all happens. So after the funeral, I guess he's just like hanging out and Russell Crowe tracks him down.
Right, in front
of the Brooklyn Bridge, I think.
Yeah, they're on the Brooklyn Bridge and he's like, all right, this is happening. And the horse comes in. Oh, that's what it is. He's getting ready to flee town with the horse. And he's like, all right, horse, she's dead. It's back to just me and you again. Let's get out of there.
Finally.
Yeah, the horse
is
like, you know what?
Shit.
I've been waiting. You ruined my Christmas hanging out with this girl. I was in a barn for Christmas.
Do you honestly want to count the amount of times I told you not to fuck her? Because she's going to die. Have you read anything about consumption? Man, I'm a horse.
I'm a horse that knows all about consumption.
I talked to a doctor once. That's all it took.
And Russell Crowe's gang, like, they're trying to kill the horse.
I thought I was going to have to watch a horse get slaughtered.
They're
and I was
skin the horse, they
alive, say. He says. Skin it alive.
So Colin Farrell, you know, grabs a knife. He can kind of fight like Jason Bourne in this movie, which is obnoxious. He fights off a couple of these goons, kills some of them, and he frees the horse. And he's like, get out of here, horse. And the horse is like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, horse, I said. And then the horse just takes off. He's like, fuck this. The horse flies away. So then,
and then Bigfoot's there, and he rolls up a newspaper. He's like, don't you understand? We don't want you anymore. And he's smacking Bigfoot in the face. And then Bigfoot leaves the movie, too.
Poor Harry and the Hendersons. So then Russell Crowe delivers not one, but 19 headbutts to Colin Farrell and then pushes him off the bridge.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. And, like, this is for all you movie villains out there. Never throw somebody off a bridge into the water.
Nope.
Don't do it. Guess what? It's the easiest thing to come back from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Stick a knife in his throat.
Dr. Richard Kimball did it.
See, if he can do it, I mean, and that was a sure you're going to die situation.
Totally. That guy did not kill his wife, man.
And man, just put a knife in his throat and then toss him over. It's
right.
So simple. You got the knife right there.
That's what you do in New York.
And I mean, this guy is like killing everybody. He wants to butcher people left and right, and he takes the soft side with this kid.
Also, you're a demon, dude. Why are you just pushing people?
Yeah.
Put your demon face on and bite his head off.
Yeah, or burn
him. Eat the body. Eat the whole fucking thing.
Just eat it.
I need, you know what this movie lacks is a real nice occult practice or something.
We need some sort of ceremony.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
Even when they go to the devil, it's just some asshole hanging out in a loading dock.
It is.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
So anyway, flash forward to 2014. He hangs out in Central Park making chalk drawings. His memory has been wiped.
Yes.
He hasn't aged a day.
Yeah, the Men in Black found him.
Yep, exactly.
Zapped him.
They zapped him.
And he's doing these drawings, which is the exact drawings that Russell Crowe did in Blood to hunt his lady fair down.
Right.
I don't think she's going to be appreciating that. You know, if she's looking down as a star being like, wait a second, you're just drawing the bad guy's drawing of me?
How does he even have that in his memory?
It's a vision.
No, it's the headbutt. He did so many headbutts, some of his mind went into Colin Farrell's.
It's like tapping two cell phones together to share an MP3.
It's exactly like that.
So he
don't forget this drawing.
So he runs into another precocious turd, and this time it's this little girl's mother is Jennifer Connelly. Welcome back to the movies, Jennifer Connelly.
I guess.
Great picture to return to. So she's here, and the little girl's like asking all these questions like, what's your name? Where do you come from? He's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I have no memory. Jennifer Connelly, as a mother who watches her daughter run into a long-haired, weird-looking dude in Central Park, allows this conversation to go on way too long.
Way, way, way too long.
They have like a full 2 to 3 minute talk, and she's like, well, it was nice meeting you. Have to go. No, no, no. You pull that child away right away, man, immediately.
You might not be able to hear that conversation, but half of it is curse. It's half of it is the most disgusting shit you ever wanted to hear.
Oh, totally.
This guy's muttering to himself about demons and the devil and the angels and the star people, and he's doing little cartoons on the sidewalk.
This dead girl he was making out with after he fucked her. Like, I mean, it's...
He's just dead. Well, maybe he forgot that part. Maybe that's part of the
amnesia. Maybe that one was lost in the swipe, too.
But it'd be great if he was just yelling that in Central Park. Because, you know, people who haven't visited New York or lived here, that's what happens every day. That's nonstop.
So he starts, like, getting some of his memories back.
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
And he remembers William Hurt's name.
Isaac.
Isaac Penn.
Isaac Penn, yeah.
And so he goes to this library that William Hurt's character, like, you know, donated money to or whatever, and he goes looking for him. He has no idea that 100 years has passed.
It's like the Isaac Penn branch of the public library or something.
He's just
like, I'd like to speak to Isaac Penn.
And this dude's just like, are you messing with me or what? And it turns out, wow, I mean, how convenient Jennifer Connelly works at this library branch. So he's like, oh, I got to go see some microfiche. And she's like, okay, I'll take you down to this, you know, the microfiche or whatever. Let's look up, you know, Mr.
Because
Penn.
He doesn't have ID. Like, oh, yeah, clearly an immortal would never have ID.
The guy is like, okay, you can apply to look at this microfiche. It'll take like 2 weeks. I just need two forms of identification. And he's like, yeah, so that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
And so then Jennifer Connelly is like, oh, well, lucky for you, I work here. So they go down to the basement and she like, you know, puts up this microfiche. And there is William Hurt. And he's like, oh, well, look, it's... Could have been my father-in-law, but I fucked her and she died.
That guy's furnace.
Totally fixed that guy's furnace one time. That's crazy.
It looks like a happy customer.
And then it like cuts to a picture of Lady Sybil, you know, and he starts like tearing up like, oh, she was so beautiful. She, you know, she had consumption and whatnot, you know.
And then there's a picture of him.
There's a picture of the two of them. And yeah. Jennifer Connelly just turns around and the line is, now, what's going on here? It's what she says. Now, what's going on
here? And
then
she says something like your father?
Or? She's like, she's trying to rationalize it. She's like, it's got to be your father, right?
Why wouldn't your first thought be con job?
Or dangerous homeless time traveler.
Well, that's also a problem. I mean,
that is always my first suspicion.
Oh, yeah.
Dangerous time traveler?
I watch Terminator. That's my first. That's the first place I go.
Mm-hmm.
He says something like he's standing there just crying over this microfiche. And she's like, and he's just like, she played Brahms, just like crying. And she's like, cut to him just at her house.
Yep.
What?
Why is this movie even still happening?
Well, that's the thing.
Yes.
It's two movies. The second of I didn't like the first one. Why are you giving me the second one?
Well, maybe you'll like it if it's set in 2014.
And oh, and by the way, because we did, it's I guess it's a late reveal. Cancer kid.
Oh yeah. So instead of consumption, Jennifer Connelly's daughter has cancer.
Oh man, the 21st century.
Yep.
With all these weird things like cancer and cars. And well, I guess they had cars back then.
So, oh man. So, you know,
like Jennifer Connelly is like this, she's like a journalist or whatever.
And she does food recipes for the New York Times.
But like the editor or something is.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
How do we even get to this? I mean, this is.
Well, because there's, okay, so there's two things.
Yes.
So he's like, well, you know, I can prove it to you. After they see, he's like, well, there's one person. Now, Willow, when she was a kid, she was like 5 years old, 5-10 years old.
Yeah,
maybe?
she was like maybe eight or something. 1916.
Yep.
Write that down.
Yeah.
1916, she's 8 years old. Let's just say it that way. So that means that she was born in 1908. That means that she is approximately 106 years old. and she is running the New York Sun.
Yep. That's why no one reads it, because it's
and
deranged.
And she's fine,
gibberish.
By the way, she's walking around. She's just fine.
She's played by a very chipper Eva Marie Saint.
Who was born in the 1920s.
Yes.
So it makes a little more sense. I mean, honestly.
106 years old.
Editor of the New York Sun.
Look, you did a shitty 1916 period piece. Do a shitty 1976 period piece, okay?
Right. Well, the book is set in the 80s, probably, right?
It's not set in
1914. So it's the 1980s.
Yes.
Which is feasible. 106 years old. She's the editor of a newspaper.
Oh God!
And she walks it like she's like, "Oh, can you like, you know, I'll take you to go see her, or whatever." They go to the office. She's like, "Oh, is she in?" Then this brassy old lady walks out, and she says to the receptionist, "She's like, Sandra, today I want a chocolate milkshake with whipped cream for lunch." And I'm like, 106 years old, ma'am.
You are having chipped beef.
Dude, I'd love some chip beans.
And maybe steamed vegetables.
You're having an IV and you're dying
more
this
afternoon.
More
than likely an IV.
You're dying this afternoon.
Well, like, she sees Peter Lake standing there.
And you know, doesn't have family. A heart attack.
I thought she would just instantly go, oh, because she's like freezing up here now, you know?
Yeah.
I thought she would be like, oh, I knew the Grim Reaper would take a familiar form. Or it's like, oh, I'm seeing my dead friends.
Honestly.
Oh, here comes the big one.
Dude, she turns around.
Was there.
She turns around after ordering this milkshake and just sees him standing there. And he's like, little Willa. And instead of her heart exploding 1,000 times, she's just like, Peter Lake. And does the same, like, earlier in the movie.
Come on, get in here.
Yeah, they established that, like, when she was little, she would do, like, arms up, like, pick me up. She does the arms up, and, like, they give a big hug. No, this woman's dropping dead. And you know what, Colin Farrell? Just because you're a timeless person now doesn't mean that you can just show up to people you used to know who are 106 years old and just be like, eh? Eh? Like, you have to, like, Jennifer Connelly needs to be like, okay, listen, I need you to sit down. Okay, I need you to just keep an open mind. What's about to happen is going to be very shocking, and I don't want you, at the age of 106, to die in front of me.
So you took your Tuesday pills. They're all in their system, right?
I mean, working, right?
A healthy dosage. And I don't know what to tell you. This guy's here.
Dude, and they go back to her house to, like, hang out for the afternoon, I guess. And he's like, how is this happening? And she's like, well, you know, I'm so old, you just stop being surprised by things. No!
No.
One,
no.
I'm surprised that you're 106 years old and running a newspaper.
No, the older you get, the more surprised you are by things. Like, oh, what's that noise?
Exactly. She should be outraged.
And I don't remember exactly. Is it ever addressed why he's, like, timeless?
Yep. Will Smith tells us that apparently
our second Will Smith,
he loved her so much that he just couldn't die. That's it. That's how they explain it. It's what he asks William Hurt earlier in the movie.
So remember that next time you're on the battlefields in some foreign land. Just keep loving your heart.
Love somebody so much.
And if you die, I guess you didn't really love her.
It's such a belittling thing to loving couples all over the world,
well,
right?
Sure.
Like, do you imagine, like, some old person watching this movie, like a recently widowed something or other, you know what
like,
I mean?
Like, oh, let me just sit down with this, all this fun little fantasy romance, make me feel better.
And then the movie tells this person, like, sorry, ma'am. I guess you didn't love your husband didn't love you enough because he's dead in the ground.
And then her heart explodes a million times.
And apparently you didn't look hard enough, because if you had looked hard enough, you could have found yourself a flying horse.
Just, dude, this horse comes back, by the way.
A spirit guide.
It's a very uneven movie. Most of the movie is in 1916. We're not in 2014 for that long.
I think it's like 30, 40 minutes, maybe.
The beginning does a lot of, like, rocking back and forth, setting up that he's living in Grand Central in both time periods.
Yes.
But when we get to 2014, it's not there for that long. So they hang out with Eva Marie Saint for a little longer. And then it's awesome. Like, they're leaving and they're on the front steps. And she's like, well, Peter Lake, I suppose I'm never going to see you again. And I was like, why would you say that? Because you're 106 years old? But I just love this. Like, well, this is probably the last time we're going to see each other. Clearly, they've established they're both immortal in their own ways. Yeah. Like, maybe it's feasible you'll meet up for lunch again at some point, you know? Like, who knows? Yeah. So then Russell Crowe is, of course, still alive. He's a demon, so he's ageless as well, you know? And he's tipped off in some way or another that Colin Farrell is still alive.
What's rubies.
Oh, the rubies say it again,
the rubies
eh?
And the jades. But because it doesn't show him a map. It just kind of, like, he just, like, moves, like, a jewel one way. And
right.
Like, oh, he's alive still.
So why would Russell Crowe wait until 2014 to double check his work? Like, you throw him off the bridge that day, go back to your hideout, maybe have a celebratory scotch. You're an evil demon.
Sure.
That's fine. Light up a cigarette and then be like, all right, now I'm just going to put the jewels out real quick just to make sure that when I do the, you know, the configuration to show me where Colin Farrell is, it says he's in the East River and I don't have to worry about it.
Where to go?
Oh, no, I lost him. Like, why wouldn't you do that? Why would you wait 98 years?
Establish something that's like every 100 years I could do this or something.
Yes, exactly. And
wouldn't
something
your
like that.
Friend Lou know about this?
Yeah, totally. Wouldn't Will Smith be like, why are you celebrating? He just crawled out of the river. He's still totally alive.
He's with the horse. The horse and him are fine.
So Russell Crowe like has a new bodyguard, which is
Kevin Durant.
It's Kevin Durant. And he is the grandson
of Romeo.
Of Romeo, which is just ridiculous and
great.
Comes to nothing.
There's a hilarious moment though where he's like, hey, remember that story I told you about how I murdered your grandfather? And Kevin Durant's like, all right, I'll just back out of this office quietly. Pardon me. So, I mean, whatever. They have to go back to that. Like, Colin Farrell's memory is coming back. Mm-hmm. And he realizes, like, oh, it's the house is the place. Let's go there.
Right. And this Jennifer Connelly's daughter is the girl I was supposed to save. That's the miracle I can
right.
do.
Right. So it turns out that
she has a...
The drawings were always of her. In
right.
her
she has
her
a red scarf
smock.
Around her head, shielding the cancer.
Right,
hair.
The radiation. You know, she's got a scarf on there. Yeah. So it's Russell Crowe's vision, you know, mistook that for red hair. It was a red scarf. So Colin Farrell realizes this and was like, oh, I know how to save your daughter. We got to get to this house. Yeah. So the horse, you know, takes them. He's like, oh, by the way, this is my flying horse.
Well, by the way... because Lou and Pearlie,
oh right,
they have another talk, yes. because,
little deal with the devil here,
and it's kind
we're
of
we're losing Lucifer, we're losing bad,
we're losing bad, and like Lou makes this whole thing. He's like, look, Pearlie, I don't think you should go after him, and Pearlie is like, nope, I'm gonna make a deal with you. We're going to fight, me and this Colin Farrell.
Yep.
If I get killed, I'm dead. If he gets killed, he's dead.
Right.
And
he gives a deal to become mortal, right?
One of us is going to... And he says this, and I thought it was just, you know, one of his many who-gives-a-shit lines.
Right.
He's going to turn to snow and get scattered to the four winds.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
So basically the deal is, if Will Smith lets him go outside of the city, which I love that New York City is the demon hell realm, by the way.
You know what? I can confirm.
So he's like, all right, if I let you do this, I have to turn you mortal to do it. So you're not going to have any of your demon powers. You got to fight him mano a mano. He's like, all right, you know, I'm cool with that, man. I'm going to go get him. Don't worry about it. So he turns him mortal. They go up to the house. He knows that's where they're going to go. So there's this lake, you know, this frozen lake and whatnot, and he shows up with like 20 goons, and
they drive cars on the lake.
Yeah,
they go limousines
right up to it, because I guess it's, I don't know, is this an island or some shit?
They never really specify where this actually is. I mean, you can drive cars on deeply frozen lakes.
Yeah, but you probably shouldn't drive like 7 of them next to each other.
Probably not. You
probably
shouldn't
not
be,
the smartest.
You shouldn't be doing 60 miles an hour on a frozen lake.
You
yeah,
probably
also.
Shouldn't put 40 tons of weight in the same spot.
Not exactly the smartest thing to do.
It's a real horseshit gag too, because he's like
horseshit.
Oh yeah, because he's like she said. Jennifer Connelly says like, oh, could they have followed us up here? And he's like, no, I don't think so. And then the cars immediately come around the corner. So that he's like, all right, we're gonna kill you now. And he's like, oh yeah, watch this. And the horse jumps up into the sky, and I'm like, oh, the horse totally bailed. That's terrible. The horse totally slams down on this ice and murders the 20 goons.
Yeah.
They all fall, SUVs and all, into the frozen lake. It's amazing. Probably the best part of the movie.
And none of them could swim.
Nope. They all just drown. And so then it's Russell Crowe versus Colin Farrell, and they're fighting. And I was like thinking, like, man, I always wanted to, like, how cool would a fight scene between Russell Crowe and Colin Farrell be? It's a shame that I have to watch it under these circumstances. Yeah. It's, you know, so they have this fight. It's a pretty brutal fight. Like, Russell Crowe's beating the shit out of him for the most part. But then Colin Farrell has. So we have to go back just a second. He's kept the little name tag that displayed like the name of his little model ship that he was found in.
Yeah.
City of Justice.
The City of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
So he produces that from his coat sleeve and jams it into Russell Crowe's throat, up into his neck, you know, and murders him. He dies, and he does turn into snow and blow away.
Scattered to the four winds.
Oh, man. And so, I mean, it's such horseshit. Let's just wrap this up. So the daughter's dead. Like, she dies while the horse is flying to the lake house.
Right.
They get her in the little bed, you know, the death bed that the girl made. And, you know, Colin Farrell kisses her on the forehead. And it's like, oh, it didn't work. It didn't work. Oh, it worked. Oh, never mind.
Yep. Magic. Oh, now there we go.
Why is everyone crying? I'm a little kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's like, what are you crying for, Mom?
And then, yeah. And then suddenly we're back in the city right in front of a giant awning that says Dunkin' Donuts.
Do you drink Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, absolutely, dude. Everybody does. And it's just, it's.
You know, America runs on it.
It runs on Dunkin'. You're totally right. Yeah. You're totally right. It
happens that way.
And so, I mean, the day is saved. I'm your miracle. You don't have cancer anymore. No, that's fantastic. Fine. And she's like, well, I guess it's the last we'll be seeing you. And he's like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And he and the horse have to go back to their home planet.
The horse is like, all right, get on my back. We're going to go become stars now.
And they fly up into the sky, and it turns into a dot, and then the dot just freezes, and it's a new star.
But he also sees, like, one star, and it's like, you know, it's alluded to, like, oh, that's my lady. That's my lady's become a star. I'm going to become a twin sun up there next to her.
Yeah, right next to her, yep.
And that planet they're next to, Tatooine from Star Wars.
So wait, am I to understand that? So Colin Farrell and the horse, because I mean that is the end of the movie.
Yeah,
Colin Farrell and the horse go up and become the star.
Yes,
is it like a Jeff Goldblum Fly situation?
Oh, you think he's a half man, half horse?
Because
he's
mean,
a centaur.
It would
he's
be
got a horse
too...
cock. I didn't want to go too blue, but. If you become half man, half horse, I'm assuming you're taking that point.
If you're going to pick one thing, yeah, right. I think you got to
go.
Because
otherwise it's a BoJack Horseman situation.
And right. I mean, nobody That's wants true. That.
Nobody does want that.
You would be a cool centaur.
Yeah, centaur, I mean.
Right? That's like a consolation right there. That's what the sky's full of. They're full of centaurs and lizards and things.
I do think so, yeah, because like it's not two separate stars.
No, so you're right.
Yeah, I think
they merge into one thing.
And that's gross.
It's really weird. He becomes a centaur at the end of the movie.
A centaur sun. it's like a burning hot sun, and in the center is just a centaur running in a circle to power it. And that's how religion works.
Yep.
And the devil is defeated once again.
And that's Winter's Tale. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. One of the best credits, though, I've ever seen in my life. Way down the list, it says, costumer for Mr. Smith. And I just yelled out, fire that fucker! What costumer? His closet?
I thought you were going to talk about the credit that immediately comes up at the very end, which is essentially, it lists everything you could ever do in a movie. And it's like, by Akiva Goldsman.
Yeah, this dude was doing a lot of lifting for this movie. Written, produced, directed. Because you would have to, because who would want to be a part of this? Yeah.
Everybody can come to my house and eat lunch.
I got some cold cuts.
Got some good toasted bread for you all.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Now I know no one's going to recommend this movie.
No,
but is this movie a seeing is believing situation?
Oh, I mean, I don't necessarily think you need to.
It's longer than Star Wars.
It's
53.
It's
I thought it was over two.
It's hour 58.
Oh, okay. So it's not
so
longer
it's
than Star Wars.
3 minutes shorter than Star Wars.
All right. Which, they just dodged it.
So
it
credits,
feels longer.
I mean, but credits with the trailers and everything, it's about the same amount, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just waiting for the special edition to come out.
Of Winter's Tale?
Yes.
Where Sebulba's in it?
Right. You know, they just didn't have the technology at the time to complete certain things.
Like that horse's wings.
Yeah. They can only pay for half of the wings.
These are temporary wings. Well, when technology's better, we can give this horse some real wings.
I'm sorry you fell in love with a half-completed movie. It's just not what I intended.
That's Winter's Tale from the last year, 2014, directed by Akiva Goldsman. If you want to get a hold of us, check out our website, whmpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at whmpodcast. Right into the mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. We are doing the worst of 2014. What was your worst of 2014? Write in and let us know.
I just want to, since I jumped in on the last episode, to remind everyone about our subreddit.
Of we got the subreddit going on.
Yeah. But I want to let you know another thing you can do to help the show and make it more prolific is we have a Tumblr page, yes. whmpodcast.tumblr.com. We repost episodes there. And hey, you like the show? You got a Tumblr? Reblog those episodes. Spread the word.
Totally. Whatever way you can. And we should add on to that, you know, however you find the program, iTunes or whatever the podcast catchers or whatever you do, if you can rate and review the show wherever you get it, totally do it.
People don't realize how important that is. That actually will that will help us immensely if you could just even just give us a star rating in iTunes. It takes you 2 seconds.
If you stream the show on Stitcher, you can rate and give reviews on Stitcher now, so that's totally available. However you can do it. Also, hey, you know what? whmpodcast.spreadshirt.com. Get that Probably Secundus t-shirt. It is the hottest selling shirt in our store right now. But I will say, we also have a dog actor bandana.
You got a dog?
You know?
I put a little We Hate Movies flair on it.
Clue for next week's episode, Chris Cabin.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, what could that mean?
Oh, a lot of mystery surrounding that.
That's a huge cast.
That's a big flying horse mystery. Yeah. That is a huge cast. So until next week, when we find out what we're talking about with Game of Thrones, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Take it easy.